at the top of the hour, let's not waste any of her valuable time. Well, again, thank you very much, everyone, to attend to this dialogue on the pilot project that we have been running. We APC, my name is Carlos Rey Moreno from APC, have been running together with Senseleni Networks. The project was established to mentor some South African practitioners, South African Community Network practitioners, first to support them with their attendance to the Community Network Summit in Africa that took place in Dodoma, in Tanzania, at the end of October, beginning of November last year. And after that process, Senseleni has been providing mentorship to some of those mentees or some of the people that attended the summit. All this has been all possible thank you to the support of the UK Development Aid Agency, DFID. Farhad Ahmed is here today with us, as well as, I understand, Hopotso Mtuasi from the British High Commission in South Africa, who supported also some South Africans to participate in the summit in 2018, which took place in South Africa itself and co-hosted by ISOC, APC, and Senseleni. That's the beginning of the project was because, we felt that many people were attending these summits or these training opportunities, and then there was a continuation on how that could translate into more community networks or into more sustainability of community networks in the country. So Senseleni ran this project to take this forward, no? To understand if we identify this gap about providing accompaniment and mentorship right after the training taking place, what we could learn about that process, and whether that process was in itself bridging that gap in between attending trainings and attending events and the translation into more community networks. So yeah, I don't want to talk much further. So Luca De Tena from who has been managing the project from Senseleni Networks is here to tell us a bit more. And Sol, the floor is yours. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Carlos, and thank you, everyone. I think I've met most of you, and very warm to see everybody here. For those who have not met, I'm Sol, as Carlos introduced, and I currently manage the Senseleni non-for-profit company, which is the Senseleni body that supports the cooperatives community networks on the ground. At the moment, there's two of them. And when this conversation or the idea for this meeting came up, I believe it was just, you know, to expand on what we had reported. And really, there are so many lessons that came from this. As Carlos mentioned, it was, this idea of if we could help by, you know, dedicated focused support, what would it look like? What is something that is, you know, what are the essential ingredients to try and support people? And really the picture that came for me is bridging. So there are certain community activists or representatives that citizens that have access to, you know, sometimes in the summits, sometimes through other online platforms or from personal sort of contact, have access to information on community networks. And there's so much about community networks, right? There's the running of the network, there's the running of a new business, and it's a social enterprise, which is complex. It doesn't fall on, you know, if we are profitable, we are successful. No, it's so much more than that. It's about really, you know, how are the communities and people in the community supported, and therefore, how does our success support that, and on itself, how does that support our success? It also goes into, you know, understanding the internet, understanding what is knowledge, who is a consumer, who is a producer of knowledge, who, what is it, what is the role of the internet, what is the role of ICT in communities, well, in South Africa specifically. So some people are often given this opportunity to access some knowledge, but then there's this, it seemed to us, this huge task to bridge that to their own context. And so it's really that the mentorship was really looking at that. What do have we identified as challenges already? For example, access to expert support to help calculate what the network would look like, or what a service would look like, or what kind of skills we would look for, or, you know, what would we do with the network? But also, how does that look in my context? And what is part of the community? You know, what is the mobilization that has to happen? What can we start? Where do we start? So I've gathered most of what I could synthesize of learning in the report, which I don't expect everyone to have read, but to go through everything is perhaps a little too much. There is a section of lessons learned, which I could, you know, maybe focus. But first and foremost, I would really like to understand any questions from you, or what areas are you most interested in us, you know, going a little bit deeper into. And before I break, just to say that I'm in this meeting with my colleague Yumna, who joins in Zeleni, and she's been very much part of this mentorship. So yeah, between the two of us, we would really like to just, more than anything, answer the areas that you're most interested in. I'll leave it at that.
Thanks all. Anyone has a particular question, or now from those of you who have read the report, or rather we ask all to give a brief introduction or summary of the report itself.
Yeah, I think a brief about how the pilot mentorship program worked in South Africa, and and a bit of the, as mentioned, lessons learned, what really came out of it that was learned, and we should take forward in future. That would be a good starting point.
Okay. Carlos, should I go ahead? If, I mean, unless, of course, anybody does have any other preference.
Sure. I think it would be good if you... sorry for that. Go ahead.
No questions. I think I agree with Kathleen's points there. Sorry, my name is Forhan. I'm the program manager for Digital Access Program, sort of stepping in for the SRO at the moment. So yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, a little introduction to the report. It's quite bulky. Well, it's about 25 pages long, and I only received it about an hour or so ago. So I haven't had a chance to go through it. So maybe if you can, you know, point out some very obvious things that's happened over the duration of the project, it will help me to understand a bit better in terms of what really happened, and yeah, the, definitely the key lessons learned. Thanks.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Forhad. So if you're okay with, I'm going to then share the screen just to give a bit of content, you know, just a bit of visuals on the, I'm just going to share the report to take you through some of the areas. If that's okay, Carlos, or would you like to share something on your side?
No, go ahead, go ahead.
Okay. So let me see, let me know if you can see it.
Yes, we can see it.
Okay, great. So this is just to let you know. So what, where we are, right? This is South Africa. And really what came was, well, let me go through the process. We, as Carlos mentioned, thanks to DFID, we were able, or we helped to coordinate, take 10 fellows from South Africa. And there were different kinds of, community network practitioners. Some of them were promoters, some of them were really community-based activists or just leaders. And out of that, we developed a call for mentorship. I'm going quite quickly over the overview. I can go into any of the details, but basically the call was to say, okay, we have an opportunity to support you to have access to get to the next step of development of a community network in your community. In some cases, there were a couple of community networks present in that. Let me go back. We had a meeting at the summit with all the South African fellows and other fellows that were, for example, supported through LockNet and through ISOC as well. So all the South African community networks practitioners were invited to come to this meeting at the end of the summit to talk about this opportunity. And so there were some that already had a community network or from quite initial stages to quite mature in terms of, for example, Ineti, that's been running for about 8 years, but they still very much consider themselves at a research stage. To communities that have been, typically actually that have come to came to the Community Network Summit in 2018 in South Africa, had some communications with Zenzeleni, or if they didn't go to the summit, had communication with Zenzeleni, and then came to this network, the Community Network Summit in Tanzania in 2019. So it was this kind of interest that was followed up often by different community members saying, we want to do this. And we get, Zenzeleni gets, emails or calls, weekly with new communities wanting to be supported to start a community network. So we said, okay, let us help you take your community network or your concept to one step further in its development or strengthening it. And so we did a call for mentorship. One of the key things was that we understand is community buy-in. So as anyone that has worked with communities would know that sometimes it is very difficult for an individual themselves to catalyze a whole shift in a community. So and often if it's seen as a very individualistic sort of initiative, it could, it could receive quite a lot of resistance from the community. So we requested that those the people that approached us or that requested to be part of the mentorship program be nominated by the community. So that was a first step of trying to, put it out to the community that this was an opportunity, not for an individual, but for everybody. Yes, represented by a person that they nominate. And so what came was, there really were, there was, we kind of counted on the limited time that we had and, which meant we had to focus on, the staff we had and the ability to do something within 4.5 months. We had space for 5 communities. And really from that process of, and I'll just go down, from that process of calling 2 community members and receiving, there were really 5, complete or applications that met all the requirements. There were, and so we started with those 5. And those 5 were, those were the ones in this map. So there was one in Cape Town in an urban area, It's in the outskirts in, you know, a community that has been, you know, that was during apartheid was forced removed from their homes and has been marginalized, you know, socially and economically. And then the other three were in an Eastern Cape. Two of them didn't have a community network at all. Out of those, both of the ones that didn't have a community network had actually come to both the summits and had this sort of following and had shown very much interest from different people in the community to, especially with Zenzeleni, in wanting to develop a community network. And then the other two were the community networks in Mankosi and Situlele, which are part of Zenzeleni. And so really the design of the course or the design of the mentorship was based on who came to the program and at what stage were they. The one in Cape Town, as I said, that's in Netty, had been working for 8 years, but they had a particular set of critical issues that was, you know, and not enabling them to actually develop. And that was very much focused on their technical elements. You know, in Mankosi, the critical element was that it was an initiative developed by the elders. And even though it had grown in strength and in the business and technical model, the youth had been quite excluded, or not deliberately, but somehow they hadn't been able to attract the youth. So that was their goal. And the representative there was actually a young community leader that has a whole lot of other youth initiatives. So it was about how to match the youth initiatives that are already happening with Zenzeleni that's already happening, the local community network. And bridge that I suppose generational gap perhaps, or well, that was what we were exploring. In Zitulele, it was about consolidating the business model, which they hadn't. In Malungeni, which is one of the places that didn't have a community network, the representative was a young teacher, and she was specifically interested in the role of ICT to, you know, to reach both children and parents, you know, relevant content. And in Xolobeni, that community has a long history of community activism around environment and protecting their land. And so they were looking very much around preservation of land and indigenous knowledge. And that was their primary interest towards a community network. So, and I didn't mention that in Ocean View, it wasn't only the technical, the mentee in that case is a teacher. And he has been exploring very much the use of ICTs to improve student results. And this is in a context of high violence and high stress and trauma. And he's already seeing that they're having, you know, that the playfulness that ICT brings and the diversity of content is already, you know, improving results. Performance and just general being of the students. So from there, what we did, we had two focuses or two products that we worked around, even though we worked for each context on its own, there were two products that we were aiming towards. One of them was a technical assessment. And that is really from equipment to what cost they're getting their bandwidth at to what kind of configuration and what kind of services. So it was a techno-economic sort of assessment. And the other one was very much linked. It's this. It's a plan of the vision, sort of taking change theory of what do they want to create, very much looking not at the network for the network as a infrastructure, but from the kind of community change that they wanted to create, and what would the next step do to that? So in the case, well, I mean, I can go into each one of what they aimed to do, but it was very much linked at what the network would do for the community in the way that they wanted the community to progress or shift towards. And that was done through various formats. So one of them was we set up an ongoing meeting. There were group meetings to enable peer-to-peer learning. And then that was every 2 weeks. And every alternate week, I had a one-on-one with each of the mentees. We also facilitated some expert, or what we called expert, thematic sort of webinars. The first webinar, actually, Josephine, who's in this call, participated. She gave really a wonderful overview of what community networks in Africa are doing and different examples of how they've been seeded or what they've been catalyzing and so on. And so there were three webinars that we actually shifted offline because we found that was one of our lessons, is that we really needed personal time to be able to grasp all this intense learning. Personal, I mean physical time. And there was also a visit to three community networks. And so we looked also at what the interest of the participating mentees were. And we then decided that, you know, we would go to SOWORK, which is the Soweto Wireless network in Soweto, Johannesburg. We would go to Mamaila, which is so Soweto is an extensive urban network, very interesting, very established, very technically strong. And then the Mamaila community network, which has recently been started, is in rural Limpopo, and, you know, with just three nodes. And then we went to Ocean View, so the Ineti network in Cape Town, which was a mentee, but also that everybody wanted to actually see the network. And yeah, and really focused on a lot of the theory or the discussions or the possibilities or the thinking about what people could take back to the communities. You know, those discussions were very much taken through those visits and the webinars, the workshops, and the discussions we had. I think that's the overview of the program, and I'd like to pause there before I go on to lessons to see if anyone has a question.
Yeah, Farhad, go ahead.
Hi,
Saul. Sorry, nothing from me. I was going to say, help us, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Good afternoon. Yeah, my question relates to the community visits. Did you get a chance to interact with community members that are using the network, and what was their experience of the networks that were in place?
Thanks, Khopot. So should I answer one by one or take... Can I do that? That might be easier, if that's okay. All right. I don't know if you can see, but these are some of the pictures of the community visits. And yeah, it was really interesting. So let me start with some of the positives. In Mamaila, the founder actually asked us to visit at the same time as they did a meeting for their first steering committee constitution. And, you know, I agreed, and I think it was an incredible learning experience to see how that was. And that's such an important element. And, you know, how do we as a community govern this? And what are the questions that came up from the young people? How did the elders, there was incredible leadership in Mamaila. And the feedback that came to us was just how grateful the Mamaila community was to see that other community networks existed. And for me, that really highlighted this mutual support and benefit. And I've seen it in many other instances, you know, where community development is quite a lonely work. And bringing community networks together really, or even people that are conceptualizing them, really found strength and inspiration from others. So I don't know. That was there. In Soweto, we inadvertently actually ended up talking to somebody, and you would read it in my report, because a young person that lived nearby one of the main nodes came up and started giving us a whole spiel about what he thought of the network. And quite genuinely, I think he didn't know that we had anything to do with it. You know, because he was talking about other people that had tried to put antennas there and so on. And I think that what is amazing is that is the ripple effect that the network has on people. Whether they identify as like, oh, I'm part of a community network or not, there's definitely, an appreciation for the service. There's definitely an understanding that no other option is affordable. There's an understanding that they want to be part of this. They want to have access to resources and internet, and this is something different. I don't know if that answers your question. There was a lot of complexity, like for example in Ocean View, where people, and quite genuinely, I mean, this is a learning experience, so I'll be very candid, they just thought we were funders, and it was, there was a desperation, and I mean, you know, while we were there, you know, there was hardcore violent action right outside the school we were at, and the school is, you know, under high security, and there is little understanding necessarily of, you know, what the network will mean for everybody. And it really takes some very strong, resilient, visionary individuals in a community to navigate this, you know, this journey while their community are faced with all sorts of systemic pressures.
Another follow-up question?
Yep.
If that's okay. What are some of the distinct characteristics and differences between networks in township areas, peri-urban areas, vis-a-vis, you know, community networks in rural areas like Mamaila and Mankosi?
Yeah, that's an interesting, I mean, the biggest difference that we saw, I mean, and you can see it in the economic studies, which I'll go a little bit deeper, that's actually brought up a key thing that I'd like to share, is that it's the competition. I mean, in urban areas, there's a lot of service providers. There's a lot of service providers that will reach in terms of quality. It's the price that makes it so difficult to access. But there's definitely a lot of competition. And that means that your users really need to understand a lot more about what service they are being offered. Because if they think, oh, Cell C is offering me a 5 rand voucher or with so many minutes free on Spotify or whatever it may be, they really need to understand that, you know, that those, that also has limitations or not and so on. And the average user anyway doesn't know that. Doesn't understand that. So the community network in an urban area seems that, you know, has to make a lot more effort to inform and to educate the user, I guess, in terms of what they're paying for and what the use is. I mean, in that sense, OVCOM in Cape Town has an interesting one because they started as an intranet and they have a very, you know, their local server has over 9,000 individual users because they log in, so they can track that. And so that's a competitive edge in that sense, right? Whereas in rural areas, there is no competition often because the service is so poor. So it isn't, but it's not, it doesn't get everywhere. So people, you know, are very, it's much easier to convince a user or for a user to come on board or, you know, be interested if they can see that, you know, I call and my call is much clearer that if I use, you know, this network, that's my community versus that network. Yeah, I think that one, in terms of technology, they're all very much the same. Even in urban, I mean, in rural areas where they are very far away from a point of presence or where they could get, you know, linked to fiber, obviously those costs could be quite a bit more expensive to extend the network to a place where they can access fiber. But that wasn't the case in the mentee, the participating communities all found quite, you know, close by POPs. A similarity between all of them was this difference, and that was a learning of this pilot. We've been suspecting for a long time that there needs to be a difference between what is localized work, localized operations, localized skills, versus what is centralized or what could be done, you know, the same for one network or 15 networks. And that, for example, is complex network administration. And that requires skills and expertise. And I want to emphasize this, it requires many, many years of expertise to run a network, administer it correctly. And that is skills that are scarce locally. They also take a very long time to train because it's very much finding your way around it. And a network administrator does their work off, I mean, online. It does. They don't have to be locally located. So what we're finding from Zenzeleni, but was definitely the case every time we try to do the numbers of what would be a sustainable case for all communities, was that if each of them had a network administrator, their economics wouldn't even out. It's too expensive to have a resource like that in communities that you're serving, which are of the lowest economic bracket. So you can't provide affordable connectivity if you don't work efficiently with your operations model. So, and that didn't matter whether they were in urban or rural. Yeah. I hope I've answered your question.
Thank you very much.
Maybe I can't quite read the questions and I'm not quite following. So if anyone would like to just speak and ask the question, please go ahead. I see a question from you, Josephine. I don't know if Fahad, if you also had a question.
Hi. Hi. Just a quick one on sort of when you mentioned about visiting the community networks in the different provinces and locations. I know this project's come to an end now in terms of different funding for this period, but I just wanted to know what sort of plans or ideas you've got in terms of how you would tackle visiting certain areas and locations given this whole COVID situation. But yeah, that's about it really.
So if I understand you correctly, is we actually finished our last visit just before the first cases were identified in South Africa. It it definitely stumped our last meeting. We wanted to do a larger meeting with the mentees, but also the fellows and also other, you know, key individuals in South Africa that really have been very interested in the community networks movement and have shown over time that they're willing to, you know, to come together to do the next step, whatever that may be. And that meeting was cancelled, moved first online because of COVID. And then the tension was so high on the lead up to lockdown that nobody was focused enough to really attend a meeting. So in terms of COVID, yeah, I mean, it really did disrupt the last bit of the mentorship. Going forward, you know, we've been in contact with people online. I think it's a bit of a strange time in that everybody's kind of holding their breath and not quite sure of what the future holds. That's on one hand. In terms, and that affects whether they were thinking about community networks or not. On the other hand, access to information has become so, so critical, and access to reliable information has become so difficult to navigate in the context of COVID. So, I mean, following this mentorship, you know, as Zenzeleni, we launched a free community notice board where we were trying to also provide information that was, you know, from trusted sources, but also translated into isiXhosa, the local language, and, you know, try to, get information out there, which was difficult to get or difficult to sift through. And from all mentees, that has really been the case of, you know, people don't have access to the information that will keep them safe. So it's been an interesting question. I don't know if I'm not really answering how we are looking at visiting. I mean, we're not. We are in national lockdown. We can't move for now. But certainly it's been an interesting double sort of, you know, one, you know, people holding their plans, and on the other hand, desperate to get hold of information and really mobilizing in community networks that participated, getting information or responding to COVID. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. Thanks.
Yeah.
Sure.
Can I pose another question?
Sure.
Right. So is it possible for you to take us through highlights of these four or five communities in terms of what the findings were in terms of the technological report? What is your baseline assessment of the competency in that management team? And then what are the possible next steps the community network, maybe management team, has identified as a priority moving forward? And this question I'm posing at the back of that good initiative that is spoken about now, about how this project ended with a flagship of a community notice board. Are there any early wins that are evident in the other communities, or low-hanging fruits? Or would you be suggesting that across all these networks, there's a need for, channels for sharing reliable developmental information?
I think that's it's an interesting question. It's quite multi-layered for me. And I wonder whether I should perhaps go into the lessons learned, because I think I think it speaks to a lot of what you're saying. I mean, you're talking about capacity, you're talking about low-hanging fruit, next steps. Those are all, for me, quite complex, complex issues that intertwine. So if you wouldn't be against it, I would like to just highlight some of the lessons learned of the program. And maybe if I still haven't, you know, answered your question, I could do so. Would that be okay?
Yes, Sola, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. And then, sorry, just I saw that in the chat there was a question from Josephine. I don't know. Josephine, do you want, before I go into this, and from Cynthia?
Yes. The question is on, with regards to the mentees, I just wanted to know that given that the project had CNs at different stages, as you mentioned, some maybe it was a development or piloting stage, and others were more strengthening, how that impacted, I said peer-to-peer learnings, but also just to know how, also for Zinzeleni as the one, as the one running the project, how that impacted also your ability to meet each of the different ASEAN's needs.
Okay, sure. Yeah, maybe I can answer just that. And it also speaks to one of Khopotso's points of capacity. So I was able to appreciate that in terms of development, or, you know, we had some critical lessons to share from Zinzeleni, or my experience in Zinzeleni really did speak to a lot of the questions or challenges that all the mentees were having. So I felt like we were able to, I guess that, yeah, I feel that we've been doing a lot of work on the sustainability and the technical elements that would be the most mature, so that even to the most mature of the mentees, we were able to impart some lessons. And mostly that our job was to also provide expertise that would speak to the development stage at which they were. So that was a critical role, that we were facilitating expertise for the mentees, not providing all the expertise. And that would be at whatever level, right? Something that is in the lessons, and which I think is really profound, and I don't really have the answers to, is the capacity on the individual level. And I suppose on a social level. So the mentees that did best were older. There were two mentees that were young, under 35, 30 actually, and then two that were 40 and up. And by far, there was a level of maturity that was required. And I can speak of lots of, you know, examples, but, and I'm sure Yumna would agree with me because we discussed this, it was amazing the sense of understanding one's community, understanding commitment, understanding a lot of the lessons that we were trying to manage or bring into the plan, the community development plan, had to do with the individual's own ability to understand those concepts. And where, you know, we could easily address somebody didn't understand cash flow. We could spend time on that. But there's a deeper level. And on that, yeah, and I feel that maturity was, one of the maturer people, didn't have a community network, had just come into, really, she just for the first time been exposed to the depth of community networks in August last year, and has come full circle and developed this incredible plan. And then the And then that was from nothing, right? And then the other also more mature person, and maybe it's not in years, but in character, right? It was from OVCOM, and he, you know, they'd been the most experienced of the program individuals in community networks. So the exposure to community networks themselves didn't play as much a role as the maturity to grasp such a complex program. Not program, but I guess concept, which is development of your community. The other thing was around the background of people. And this is not so much the education background or formal education, but the level of exposure. And I bring this up a lot, but really it's something that keeps coming up for me is to be able to do a thorough planning of what, you know, economically is going to make sense, what technically you're going to have to bring in, even if you don't understand all the technical terms, even if you don't understand all the business premises and of your community, you need to have a level of exposure of the world or of systems. Well, that's how it feels to me. And people from the more rural context that had left their villages less definitely struggled with the concepts much more. Again, whether they had been exposed, I mean, one of them, the person from Mankosi, had been exposed from to Zenzeleni's community network in Mankosi for 8 years. But it was more about, that there wasn't enough understanding of how the systems worked to be able to have a good grounding into which to provide or discuss different options. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So, I mean, I'm realizing that I can extend my time, but the lessons learned are quite intense, quite lengthy as well. So I'm going to try and perhaps answer more to the queries on what's the next steps and what are highlights or what are lessons. I mean, one of the lessons we found and one of the failings, let me talk about that, of the mentorship in a way, was that we started off with 5 communities and halfway through or two-thirds of the way through, one of the community representatives dropped out. And the reason for that was financial. It was somebody that was committed, but due to financial pressure, they had to leave their community and go to Joburg and take up a job offer that they were given. And that relates to the dedication, the amount of time. Let me just speak about this individual. So the individual, was very clear as to how committed they were to their community. And in their case, they had a community network that they were in Zithulele. But, the reality of these communities is very, very harsh. And I found that the individuals have to be able to justify, not just to themselves, not just to their family, or it's to their families and to their community, why they are taking so much time out when it doesn't translate into money immediately. And, in this program, one of the things that helped is that we had a community engagement sort of part. It was a cash amount that we had dedicated to supporting people to be, to engage with the community. And that was to create an event or to, drive around or to buy airtime so that they could call people, because people don't call you back because they don't have money. And somehow, whatever it was that they needed to engage their community. And that was essential. without that, people wouldn't have been able to participate in the online calls. They wouldn't have been able to do the research that they wanted to do. And it supported them a little bit to ease the work that they had to do. But in terms of, yeah, the capacity and financial situations of a critical place where people in communities that want to develop their communities find themselves in are real. And I think, you know, going forward, any kind of support has to be very, very mindful of how much time they take. I think one of the findings that I had is that, thank God we had, you know, the ratio 5-1 mentor, so 5 mentees to 1 main mentor was quite intense, because what really helped, both from a learning perspective, but also from a management, self-management, community management perspective, was the relationship that was built. And the support has to be a really caring support, because otherwise, you know, I don't know if I'm making the sort of the picture clear, but people are standing on a very, very rocky basis. And this is putting a lot of pressure on them. And if the mentorship or whatever support is given doesn't take that in consideration, I think we would leave a lot of people out, or it wouldn't be valuable because they wouldn't be able to then contextualize it or bring it down to their community's reality. So, yeah, I could talk so much on so many elements, but I'd rather be guided by questions.
So, yes. Considering the, you know, the socioeconomic context and how it impacts on you know, the committees and members of the committees and that are driving community networks, what recommendations do you have in terms of supporting the community, driving the community initiative? What's your recommendation in that regard?
So if I understand, sorry, could you repeat, is it, what are the recommendations in supporting community driving? Could you just repeat the question?
Yes, you know, you've gone through a lived experience where you have worked with different age groups, different people with different exposure levels, but driving community networks, you know, with different kind of backgrounds, right? And the question I have is that you are flagging that as very, very key and very important as a success factor to, you know, having successful community networks. Do you have any, have you thought about recommendations on how to deal with the backdrop that supports, you know, if the longevity of and says the longevity of the committees that are driving community networks?
Okay. I mean, I think that, you know, what is a critical success factor, I think, comes to what I've spoken or what I've mentioned, but also to the nature. I think what makes community networks work is that they are, you know, they fit to their context. And so any support mechanism, any support action or whatever it may be, has got to be fit for that specific context. I don't think there's a one size fits all. You know, there's certainly, you know, sort of commonalities or baseline knowledge that everybody could benefit from. But in terms of support, it should be individualized as much as possible. And that allows for also the flexibility. And I speak in the reflections or the report also about the difficulties or the diversity that we found in community engagement from the mentees themselves. In one community, the mentee said, you know, she has been advised by the committee that runs, you know, their action to have a very good informative product before they approach the community, or it would start a whole debate and sort of stop any action. So community engagement at an early stage was actually discouraged. And I got it. I mean, there's a lot of conflict. There's a lot of different issues around that. And so the fact that we were able to adapt the program to that and not say, oh, you have to tick the box of community engagement on week 5, you know, it's essential for both taking that pressure or alleviating the extra pressure that the mentee might find themselves in terms of conflict with their community. And also to, you know, to at the end of the day, what is most beneficial for the community and adapting the response and the support in that way and be prepared for it to be very diverse across communities.
Thanks for that, Saul. And any, is it possible for you to guide us as we zoom in into these 5 communities? Do you have a takeaway for us for Soweto, a takeaway for us for Mankosi, Mamaida, you know, those 5 communities? What are your observations, and what do you think are the next steps that the leaders have identified for themselves that we could, you know, try to keep track of?
So that's easier to answer, thank goodness. but that is in the individual plans. So you can see, you know, they just be prepared for a different kind of capacity to create amazing presentations or less amazing. But really, the communities or the mentee plans themselves, supported by the data sheet, which, you know, highlights the costs and, you know, the plans, the configuration, that where the network would go. So each of them have a next step, either to seed or to trial something. So just very quickly, in OVCOM, their critical issue is that, you know, they weren't giving steady service or good service, or they had a maximum in terms of how many people could connect, no matter, yeah, because their backbone wasn't strong enough, their source, right? So the next step is to strengthen the backbone and then test giving access points to actually apartments, because the connectivity is now in hotspots, and being such a high violence area, people using their phones after hours when they're home become targets for gangsters. So in terms of creating more safety and creating better service for the users, their trial is one of the apartment blocks that they want to try. So that's an OVCOM. In Mankosi, for example, the next step is connecting 5 netball fields where there's congregation of youth, where there's a youth netball league that has started and actually gotten quite a lot of traction, but also that they use that netball league to discuss key social, you know, issues that are relevant to young people, whether it be you know, sexual health to drug and alcohol abuse. It's really become a meeting point for peer support. So, and there's a case like this for every one of the participants. You know, and that was the point of this mentorship, that they came out with something that they could then take to their community or to a partner to show, this is what we want to do, this is what we need, this is why, this is what it will take. If I've answered that, I see a question from Cynthia. And just, yeah, very, so the gender dynamics and power structures, that's a very, very interesting question and very much part of our learnings. You know, who gets to mobilize, who is trusted, who's allowed to leave the community to look at another community network, who gets permission. A lot of, and we saw this most specifically in the fellows to, that we needed to, well, that we had the opportunity to take to Tanzania, that, you know, women had to, make sure that they had provided, you know, meals for a week to their family and catered and organized a relative to come and stay and done a whole lot of things before they could even say whether they could come or not. And we had such a tight window that it was not possible to, you know, we ended up having more men only because they had less responsibilities. Also around timing and who has access to what. I think that the precedents come all the time. You know, the background comes all the time. For example, by default, the people that went to Tanzania were those that had passports. Now, the people that have passports have already had access to, you know, certain opportunities, or power dynamics and gender dynamics play into it all. And I think that that's where I say, you know, that treating all community networks the same would be taking value away from the support you give them. Because I really think that, and I think that's where the mentor and mentorship or mentee-mentor relationship is so important, is to try and understand the complexity so that you can actually, in fact, answer to that complexity and not just to an aspect of it, which is then difficult to integrate into the complexity afterwards. So that's a very quick answer to a very deep question, but I hope that, that's something.
Thank you very much, Sol. I'll have to leave at the moment as well. I've seen others leaving. Just a quick point: would anybody be sending out some sort of a write-up of this catch call, or is that not on the horizon?
We've taken some notes, but it wasn't the.
Nothing formal is fine.
Tension, but we can.
There's a pad. Let me post the link on the chat.
But we'll write something for HUD based on the notes that we have on the pad.
Thanks, that will do. Yeah, I'll just something I can share with Alessandra and others. I have to leave now. Thank you very much, guys. It was really useful to hear most of the stuff. It's quite interesting. I'll have a good thorough read through the final report that was sent in a little while ago. So yeah, look forward to it. Have a good evening. And stay, keep safe.
Thank you. Thank you very much for HUD.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Sorry, just Steve is just mentioning the report. Yeah, I would say that the report, the narrative has a lot of what I've been speaking about. And again, if you want to skip it all and just go to the lessons learned, that might give you some. But I think that I've tried to put a lot of the learnings into the full report. Also, the technical report. I would really recommend for those that want to understand really the economic relationship to all of this context. I think it's been a great learning experience for me as well, that report.
Great, thank you.
So, Carlos, I don't know if there's, we're just 6:05, and I'm really sorry that I have to go to the next meeting. I'm very happy to share more if needed, you know, in another time.
Sure. No, please. You need to go, and actually it's an important thing you need to attend. I just want to thank you. Thank Yumna. Thanks. For the time today, for the report, such so detailed and with so much care, both in the report and in the implementation of the project. There will be more conversations going forward around the next stage of the project. We will be touching base soon. I myself have a lot of questions as well around what next with these communities, but what can we do different with other communities. But anyway, thank you very much, and we will be in touch by email soon. Bye everyone.
Thank you. Bye bye. And I'm happy to answer individual questions if you want to just reach out. Yeah.
Thanks all. Thanks. Okay,
great. Thanks everyone. Yeah. Bye bye.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you.